Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a place. This week, I am happy to welcome back Savoir Magazine to discuss their latest adventure to Uruguay. And to help me explore this South American destination, I am joined by Adam Sachs, editor-in-chief of Savoir Magazine, Gabe Ulla, food writer, and last but not least, Ignacio Matos, chef and co-owner of Estella Restaurant here in New York City and a native of Uruguay. So, full house. Welcome, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
So, Adam, I'd like to start with you. As we move into the summer season, there's lots of magazines on the newsstand talking about their travel edition, their road trips.
But there are?
There are. But one thing I love about Savoir is that it's always about travel, right, among other things. So, as editor-in-chief, how do you determine what destinations you're going to feature and who to send to go there?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Savoir has always been about that sort of convergence of food and travel and following food to its source. And I think it's just a mix. We think about where we'd like to go, where we haven't been recently, where we're, you know, picking up intel from friends and about where they've been or where they've been dying to go. And in this case, it was just a happy situation where Gabe and I were talking, and I assume I'm allowed to say this. He's working on a book with Ignacio and Thomas. And I was saying, have you guys been down to Uruguay recently? And he had never been. And so I forced him to go, and it all worked out really well.
That sounds just awful, Gabe.
Yeah, it was pretty sudden.
It was sudden. He left that day.
I walked into the office and just to, like, chat. And then there was like, maybe
you actually
like,
lost. Maybe, like, you came to use the restroom.
And then, and it was just like, let's do something. And I thought it was going to be like a short little story. I just want to be in Savoir. And it was like, why don't you go to Uruguay with Thomas and Ignacio? And we sort of worked it out. I texted Ignacio after I left the office. I'm like, are you down to do this? And he was like, okay. And we sort of figured it out.
So you had never been before?
I had never been, no.
And what were, as someone who hadn't been before, what were your first impressions?
I had been to Buenos Aires before for sort of pretentious college thesis reasons. But that's the closest.
Why do we keep going with this joke?
It's the gateway.
It was the closest.
Thomas was to Mexico.
Closest reference point. Yeah. Thomas's was Mexico.
I mean, it's all really the same, you know.
But like, we had 3 days to really pack in.
Ignacio just left the building.
But my first impressions of it were, I mean, we got there on this like radiant summer day because it's summer down there when it's winter here. And it was just like this huge rush, just like went straight to have like this really raunchy sandwich, which Ignacio can tell you about, which is sort of the national pride of Uruguay. And it was just this huge rush. But overall, the biggest surprise, I guess, was the people that we met, Jose Ignacio.
What was it about the people?
Just Ignacio has a tendency to sort of under-promise and undersell things. And we get to Jose Ignacio, and you meet these remarkable people that have played such a big role in his life. And they were so warm and so accommodating. They sort of moved mountains in like 2 days. And they were just naturally really laid back, really kind. And just the life there seems lovely. That I guess was the biggest surprise. Thomas and I kept sort of talking about that the whole way, how we were sort of embraced immediately.
Lovely. And Ignacio, you're from Uruguay, so how often do you get to go back these days?
Once a year. Yeah. Or once every 2 years.
Yeah.
I have a kid in Brazil, so I go more often to Brazil than I go down there. It's not easy to get to Uruguay. Let's put it that way. That's the only drag about Uruguay. It's like
was it a straight? No, you went through Miami.
No,
and then...
that was a really fun part. Like Gabe's parents, they live in part of the year in Miami, so we have 5 hours day over in Miami. So
seven.
I mean, it felt like less. We have a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun in Miami. So yeah, it worked out. But yeah, I don't go that often.
And so you grew up there. Mm-hmm. And now you're a chef in New York, celebrated and you know, well known. But what's that middle piece of, like, how did you make your way to New York?
I started working for this chef. They actually, it was at this town that we ended up staying, where I started working. His name is Francis Mannman. He used to have a place called Los Negros. And most of the people that are in the story and that we met over there, they all come from this restaurant. They all, you know, they started their own thing, so they move along. But pretty much we all meet at this restaurant. It was an incredible restaurant. Beautiful and, like, very talented people come out of it. So, yeah, that's how I ended up coming to New York, through Francis Mallman, to open a restaurant in the Hamptons. And the rest is, yeah.
And now here we are.
Here we are here, yeah.
So what would you say are some of the hallmarks of cuisine in Uruguay?
Asado, which is the barbecue that everybody knows, but it's very simple and straightforward. I mean, you guys, so it's pretty much salt.
Salt and meat. And some fire.
And lemon.
Fire and bread. You have to have bread around it. But
and you have to have a great hat, I think.
Very important. And I also learned that Jesus is from Uruguay.
You should buy the issue just for the hat. Have you seen the hat?
I of course I saw the article. Yeah, it was lovely.
The hat's good.
It's a fashion
the
hat story. Actually, like a lot of magazines.
The hat actually ghost wrote the story for me.
Oh yes. Besides, so asado.
Asado. I mean the chivito. It's I mean in the culture there. I mean our background is pretty much Spanish and Italian. Mm-hmm. It's a mix of a few other things, but the food there is pretty much Italians and Spanish immigrants. Food. I mean, they translate it in their own way, but there's a lot of similarities with a lot of dishes. But you find a lot of that in the households. And then, yeah, chivito, who knows where that came from. But
what you mentioned the chivito in the article, Gabe. So can you tell me a little bit about what that is? Like, if I go to Uruguay, I have to eat a chivito, right?
You have to eat that. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Break it down for me.
Break it down. So it's a beef, cheese, ham, bacon, tomato, lettuce, pickled peppers.
Mayonnaise?
Of course, Gabe. It's always mayonnaise. If you want to do a sandwich of whatever ingredient you want to do, we have to have mayonnaise. And pretty much, I think that's
what
it goes.
Is it like a press thing?
Yeah, it is press. It is press. And the bread, it's like the bun is like a soft bun. Sometimes it's like a potato bun or milk bun. But it holds really nice. The structure, everything is quite tender, so it's very easy to chew into it. Mm-hmm. And it's quite messy and sloppy. It feels good. I don't know. I like it. You have to move quite fast to eat it. It's like a burger, but...
It's like the BLT of Uruguay.
Yeah, quite messy BLT. Okay.
I love the idea of certain dishes that you, when you land somewhere to sort of acclimate, you go directly to, you know, in the story, you guys went directly from the airport to find this.
In this place is actually
after like 12 hours of travel.
This place is actually a 10-minute drive from the airport, and the place is an epic. It's an epic place. Like, one of the owners was there, and he's this Galician guy. It's Spanish, actually. And very sweet and charismatic, and like he really was really embracing, and like, you know, he let us use those toilets. They were epic too.
Important when you're traveling to countries.
You have no idea.
Those toilets were two holes in the ground.
Yeah,
I think we cut that description. Yeah, it was slightly. I wanted the story to stay a little more appetizing.
Yeah. So is the chivito like a street food kind of thing, or is it you can find them everywhere?
You can find them everywhere, pretty much. I mean, there is no really fancy restaurants, at least at the time that I was there. Mm-hmm. There were no fancy restaurants. A lot of pizzerias and places that do this very homey kind of style food. But then we have food trucks, and you can find food trucks that they do chivito, and then choripan. Choripan is pretty much... chorizo and pan, choripan, and they cut the word, and it's a sausage sandwich. that we put many different condiments. Actually, we didn't
have that. But the French fries were also amazing.
The French fries at the place.
Very memorable.
Yeah.
Like, they were special.
Hand cut, like, I think shallow fried.
Shallow fried.
Lots of olive oil. Yeah. Reminded me and him of, like, our Spanish grandmother's. Really tasty.
Nice. Well, Gabe, let me ask you about the dining scene. I mean, this article's beautiful. It looks very beachy, you know, a lot of outdoor dining, kind of alfresco, the barbecue. But what was your sense of kind of like the topography and how that plays into the food?
I mean, that's basically the description. Like, they're Jose Ignacio, everyone you ask is like, there are five or six places here. They're all laid back, all use an oven, grilling, super chill, seasonal places. I mean, the closest description is Montauk, but I thought, yeah, all these places blow that out of the water.
But again, we're getting at the right time there too. You know, like, you have to avoid going between Christmas and it's insane at that time, and it's, it can seem a little bit sceney. But
we were there at the end of the season, and the season had just ended.
You know, if you're planning to go down there, like, you have to have that in mind. You might not have a good impression if you got the time, and like, all the cool people is actually working. But we get right at the end of the season, and it's crazy that the story, like, the timing just lay out perfectly on the exact last weekend before pretty much a lot of the places start shutting down. La Huesha stay open, but it just was a perfect time. You know, the town wasn't crowded. It usually gets pretty crowded and insane. But everybody was just like, you know, had time to hang out and relax, and it was easy to walk pretty much to any place, and everybody was like, I don't know. It was sweet. It was a fun time to go.
You guys didn't have time to kind of hit up every destination within the country, but what happens when you go inland a little bit?
It's beautiful. Really, the countryside is like really gorgeous. I mean, we get to go to this estancia, a ranch. It's a very old that this friend's family give it to us so we can utilize it. I mean, but it's not a pretentious farm. It's just like a beautiful, simple estancia. And as you go, it's very desolated. I mean, it's not really a lot going on. It's a bunch of small little towns. It's actually a beautiful place and quite safe to travel. The geography, it's pretty. It's not that dramatic in terms of geography, but there is some transition. And
does the food change as you go inland or north? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we were in a place that it's like a little, it's a little fancy, and as you go inland, like, people eat like simpler, and you have access more to cooking with fire and like a lot of tradition that involves.
What do they cook
barbecue
on? How important is the wood to the taste of, or the charcoal?
It's extremely important, and you actually, you know, every time that I go, like, going now down there and like grilling and seeing the way that it grills, like, you can not just feel it, but see the difference, like how it holds.
Is it the type of wood or the?
It's the type of wood, and you do a mix of different wood. That's what we were doing. But a lot of time, you just do coronilla. Coronilla is the name, and it's a very short harp. It's a short tree full of thorns, and it has this very heavy hardwood. It's pretty crazy. You get a little piece and you can believe how heavy
and
it
is. Really controlled, right?
Say it again.
The fire is like really controlled,
very controlled and steady, and it holds for a long time. So perhaps, I don't know, if you're doing sweetbreads, it's crazy how it holds the temperature all the time and let it render. So yeah, the wood plays a big role, and it's quite important. And but it's not really secret in how we cook the meat, you know.
Before we take a quick break, I just want to ask you kind of about how things have changed over time. You say there's still not a lot of development, and that it remains largely untouched. But from when you were a kid, or from when you started cooking there, and you go back now, do you get a sense that it is changing, that it has changed?
It is changing, and it's evolving, and it's like in a very positive way. Perhaps, I don't know, we were talking about this place that they, you know, these coffee roasters, you know, these kids that they were in Australia, they spent some time there. Mm-hmm. And before that, it was impossible to get, like, really good coffee in Uruguay. And these kids are doing this stuff and beautiful tarts. So it's just, like, all this generation that they went abroad and come back. And some of the guys that we met at the town also, you know, they went away and they're developing this community. And that's a positive thing about José Ignacio. Like, a lot of people think it's a fancy Montauk and it's all this scene, but actually it's a very interesting community of artists and artisans and people actually making interesting things happening and farming also.
On the bread too,
bread, Gonzalo. And Salot, the guys Salahuesha also, that are making artisan breads, people making artisan cheese. So it's a very interesting thing that is happening down there. That for here it might seem like kind of like you hear and you see it all over the place, but we've been behind in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice
catching up
and see where we are down there at the moment. So yeah,
great. All right, well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be learning more about Uruguay with Sabor magazine.
Listening to Knife Show. This is Native on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I'm talking to guests Adam Sachs, Gabe Ulla, and Ignacio Matos about Uruguay. So I want to keep picking up on where we left off with the food. And we talked about asado, but we haven't talked about the fish yet, but we were talking about the beach. So maybe, Gabe, you can tell us a little bit about what you guys were eating, like, fresh off the boat.
Well, we woke up the first day in José Ignacio. I had no idea what was planned. There was, like, no itinerary. So Thomas and I hopped in a van to go to this location. And we get there, and it's this amazing peninsula that's basically this massive beach cabana. And everyone's cooking lunch. And we had whole roasted sea bass and crudos and like these beautifully fresh salads. And it was just like the most leisurely lunch you could ever imagine. I think we started eating at like 6.
Oh my God.
People were drunk on Campari. We napped. We played around. It was amazing. And you had like these massive sort of doorways that sort of framed the ocean. You had the ocean on one side and the woods on the other side. It was just like the most idyllic place. I think at one point it sort of felt like you were in The Searchers, like a tropical version of The Searchers, because you had like this, like these dark doorways and then just paradise.
And that's just something if I were to go down there, would I be able to have a very similar experience? Or
yeah, you can go there. That's open to anybody.
Okay. And Ignacio, what from your culinary experience shows up in your kitchen today?
Interesting. I don't know. I grew up eating homemade food. You know, my grandmother and my mother always, you know, I didn't experience any restaurants until I started cooking, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, before that, I mean, the most I would go to a pizza place or something like that, but very casual. So, I didn't experience anything else but this, yeah. Home-cooked food, you know, and that's the best thing for, you know, you develop a very clean palate and discerning. And I see it when it's, you know, seeing kids that actually grow up eating food that was, you know, home home cook and like comforting food, like they have much more discerning palate than somebody who grew up eating, you know.
And that kind of informs the work that you did today at Estella. And
yeah, I mean, just try to keep it simple and tasty, you know. It has to taste good, and like when you're cooking at home, you wanna ensure that, you know, everybody's pleased and happy with it. So
is there anything explicitly you're going in on the menu? Is there
we're doing sweetbreads now.
You are doing similar
sweetbreads, yeah. and we try to make it similar. You know, it's not on the grill because we don't have that luxury. We have a very small kitchen, so we do it in a flat top, but it's pretty much seasoning and cooking the same way.
Did you end up making it like a schnitzel or no?
We yeah, but I like it better. Like grill and simple, just with salt and then a lot of lemon. It's just amazing. Some garlic. We put in some garlic, which we don't do that in Uruguay. But yeah, it's that I would say.
There are little touches here and there.
Yeah, and also like the way we cook the meat in some sort of way. Yeah. It's like pretty similar too.
Well, speaking of sweetbreads, I want to ask you and Adam about the recipes that you featured in the magazine. So, you know, you go to Uruguay, but then you have to kind of bring this stuff back and make it translatable to the readers. So how did you decide on these recipes? You did the sweetbreads with the chimichurri, so we can talk about that a little bit. You have the potato salad, the crab toast, you know, asado, grilled beef ribs. So maybe you want to talk us through a couple of those.
Just on the magazine's end, it was very casual. You know, these guys were going down and Ignacio just sort of assured us that they're going to see what they could find, but not to worry because whatever they found would be pretty accessible for, you know, you could buy the a version of the fish and you could, you know, there's not a lot of tricky technique or crazy ingredients. And so what came back was very clean and simple but kind of beautifully so. And all the stuff that we, you know, we didn't have the luxury of testing it on, cooking on wood in the test kitchen, but even just doing it on grill pans and stuff, you can tell that it was very simple, straightforward stuff.
Cool. Well, what I love too is that when you went down, it was kind of the summer season there, but now we're moving into that season here. So when you have things like the tomato salad with green beans and basil, like we're going to have those ingredients fresh and ready for us here. So let's talk about what makes the perfect chimichurri. Like, why do you make your chimichurri the way you do for this recipe?
In that recipe, we keep it like very traditional, and honestly, it's like what it was in that kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Like
whatever you've got on hand.
Yeah, I mean, like you need dry oregano, salt, garlic, vinegar, and a little bit of water. Pretty much that's the traditional, most basic chimichurri.
Mm-hmm.
Chili flakes. So that's pretty much the basic. You know, like people have been like getting a little more complex about putting parsley, which... Yeah, now it's like very complex. Parsley or it's fresh radical. Oregano is radical. But traditionally it's like dry oregano. I personally really love it with dry oregano.
Mm-hmm. Like the dry oregano we would find in a supermarket?
Yeah.
Or you dry it out yourself?
No. Supermarket oregano. It has to be supermarket oregano. It has to. But yeah, that's... And I might say, for me, it's like nothing better than meat and chimichurri. And that chimichurri is like... It just cut perfectly with the fatty pieces of meat. Mm-hmm. It's really nice with a chunk of fat and bread. It's just divine.
And let me ask you about sweetbreads. I think that, and you've got some tips in the magazine, you know, sweetbreads are something that I love to eat when I'm out, but maybe at home I'm kind of like, I don't know what to do with this. But so what would you like recommend to people?
But if you're doing a party, it's summertime and you want to throw a party or a barbecue, and yeah, it's, you know, you've done sausages and it's great, or like hot dogs, but sweetbread is one of the things like a lot of people get a little bit freaked out. I mean, I think it's a lot of people that it's familiar with it, but still for some people it's sweetbread.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's actually a pretty easy, accessible, delicious, you know.
Are there any tips like definitely don't do this or think about doing this?
I try not to clean it too much. Mm-hmm. I like it when they came like down there. You can find it with more fat attached to it. Here it's a little more complicated, but like the fat helps. You don't need to clean it too much.
Mm-hmm.
We don't blanch them, but you can blanch them. Enough salt. You just need salt.
The amount of salt and meat. And
yeah,
fire.
And the and the heat has to be constant. It's very important that you provide a constant source of heat and assure that it renders. And actually, they take longer than you might think. Mm. So it's like a 45 minutes.
Patience.
So not a super high heat.
No super high heat. And kind of because
medium constant heat.
Yeah, here in America, a lot of people, when they're barbecuing, and it has to do in the way also that the grills are set up. You know, you kind of, like, you build in the fire, and everything is in one spot. When in Uruguay, we have the fire in a side, on the left, usually. And so it's still far out, and you just move the coals.
So more indirect.
Indirect, and then you can regulate your griddle. So you can always control the heat. So that helps. But you have to be present. You know, if you're doing it in a regular barbecue, you just try to keep the fire torch aside and keep it, you know, your meat in the other side, and try to control the temperature by, you know, using your hand and see how long you can hold it. Checking if it's burning or not. If it's burning, moving it around to a cooler spot, and don't try to rush it, because you want, like, the sweetbreads or like the meat and the fat to render nicely. Of course, if you're getting a smaller piece of meat, you will need a higher temperature. But in the case of a sweetbread, if you're doing like a pound of sweetbread, yeah, you better take it easy and give the time that it needs. But never too low, because the other way, like, it won't render properly. Great. So it will get soggy, and you want it crispy.
Well, speaking of recipes, Gabe, you and Ignacio, and I guess the whole Estella crew really, are working on a cookbook, correct?
Yeah.
How's that going?
Well, it's coming out in 2017, so we have time.
I see.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Is it an Estella cookbook, or is it
It's not a restaurant book per se, but it all comes from the Estella kitchen.
Yeah. So it's like, idea. It's like,
And so, yeah, I guess we'll just look forward to that in a couple of years. But and tell me a little bit about Mad in New York. How's that going? What can we look forward to?
It's more, the focus right now is really, I'm based here, but the focus really is Mad in general. Mm. After the last symposium, we sort of stopped and realized that we needed to grow and sort of change. So right now the focus is on sort of becoming more of an action-based organization. We just did a thing at the World Bank. We're working with a couple of other sort of government organizations to sort of turn it into more of a foundations, maybe not the word, but that's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect is sort of becoming more of a resource on food culture. So building a research department, we have this brilliant girl named Arielle Johnson, who's based in Copenhagen, and she's a PhD in flavor science, and she's sort of building a research department. And then we sort of want to sort of build a, not like a database, but like an archive that a never before sort of first of its kind archive of culinary information. That's the goal, but that takes a lot of work, and it takes finding money, and I think we're well on the way towards that. I mean, I can't really reveal much more, but
no, that sounds great. It sounds like it's constantly evolving, and a lot of people working really hard towards those initiatives. So
is the symposium coming back?
Yes. Not this year.
Yeah.
Cause basically we're doing these little things that are kind of big things. With the goal of sort of changing the symposium and doing something different for 2016.
All right. And Adam, how about, first of all, what can we look forward to in some of the next editions?
Well, summer, so we're still grilling. We have got the June, July issue coming out. We just got advanced copies in the office yesterday. So lots of, it's sort of a combined Cooking with Fire and America issue. So America on Fire issue. But there's a lot of good, if you were inspired by Ignacio and Gabe's story, there's a lot more sort of elemental Cooking with Fire stuff coming out.
And what about, you guys did just a website, was it a relaunch or a redesign?
Yeah, full sort of redesign, relaunch last Wednesday.
Looks amazing.
So, yeah. Thanks
looks
a lot.
Looks really
Thank
good.
You. Thank you.
And there are extras to the Uruguay.
Yeah, yeah. Check out, I don't know what the / there's nothing, but check it out. Yeah, it's a happy place to go and visit now, and so we'll be upping the original content for that, and there's a lot of road trip. The issue that these guys were in is our road trip issue, and so there's a lot more road trip content up there, and then of course we'll be going big on grilling.
All right. And Ignacio, what's going on at Estella these days? What's the spring menu look like, spring summer?
I'm working on a couple dishes. I mean, we have our staples, so it's not like, you know, that the changes are dramatic. It's certain things that change You know, it's like six, seven dishes that they constantly rotating and mutating into turning and
what's
evolving.
What's the steak like right now? What are you doing with it?
There is the steak. We're doing spinach and like and blue cheese, vegan exo. Have you tasted the exo and the product that they're doing so. From the Monfuco lab?
No.
So pretty interesting. So they drop a sample. So we tried that exo and did a batter with blue cheese. So it was, yeah, try to take this inspiration from a steakhouse kind of.
And
so
I always have to mention the rice.
Very cool. It's the black rice?
The rice is your
the
favorite.
The black rice is the greatest thing on earth.
Yeah, but it's hard with eating it all the time. It's not quite there today.
All right, guys, but we are about out of time. Thank you so much to Savor Magazine and to all of you for joining me to talk about Uruguay today.
Thank you.
Thanks for you.
To find out more and check out those recipes for yourself, the magazine is on newsstands now or head over to thebeautifulnewsavor.com. That's all for Native today. And I'm actually taking the summer off from the show, but don't worry, I'm headed to Turkey and France and who knows where else I'll end up. I'll be doing shows on the road. And if you want to follow me along online, you can find me at BKFAF on Twitter and Instagram. Otherwise, have an awesome summer and I'll see you back here in the fall.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.